Hello and welcome to another episode of Teaching for Our Time. Today we're going to address the issue of how do we get patients who are dying home to die quickly and safely. I'm really pleased to be joined by Ursula, who's our PAD care occupational therapist, Naeem, who's our discharge coordinator, and also want to mention that we've got a specialist social worker in our team too, Michelle, who's very experienced with this sort of thing and hugely helpful when it comes to vulnerable, complex patients and situations. Now, just before we get into some stories and the details of what your responsibilities are on the ward with this, I just want to talk about preferred place of death. To be able to help someone die where they want to die, we have to recognise that they're dying. So the key step is recognise someone's dying, isn't it? And then the second thing is to discuss with them what their preferences would be. You know, so do you want to unpack a little bit the idea of a preferred place of death for us?
Yeah, so it is absolutely so important that if we can achieve someone's preferred place of death that we do so. Mm. A lot of patients want to go home, and we completely understand the reasons for that. On one occasion I had a lady who absolutely wanted to go home, and she kept repeating she wanted to go home, and we were planning for that, although unfortunately she deteriorated extremely quickly and she was too unfit to travel. So in speaking with her husband, we ask, you know, what is it about home that's so important to her? And he said she has to see her cat before she dies. And you know, in that situation, together with the ward clerk, we arranged for the cat to come into the side room on the ward, and as soon as the cat saw her, her breathing immediately changed, and she passed away very quickly. So it's about really finding out what is important about the preferred place of death. Is it to go home to be able to look out onto the garden? Is it something about seeing an animal? You know, really, what's the main priority?
And what your story shows is it's not always possible to achieve someone's preferred place of death, but we can aim for sort of really individualised, person-centred care. But if we can get someone home and that's where they want to be, that's what we're going to do, isn't it? So if I'm a doctor or a nurse on a ward, I can see that Mr. Jones is dying. I know that he wants to go home. I'm going to call the palliative care team and say, he looks really ill, we haven't got long, can we get him home? What are you going to do when you arrive on the ward?
So what I would say is let us know as soon as you recognise that we will prioritise that patient, we will come to the ward. Myself as the OT, I would look about getting equipment in. So that would be a hospital bed, air mattress and some other bits of equipment. Speaking with the family, seeing what the potential is and how, asking them to rearrange equipment, furniture at home so that we can get that equipment in as soon as possible. Now, in these situations, we can request and have a bed delivered in a few hours.
It's amazing, isn't it? So we're talking same day, we can get the equipment in, get the home ready to receive this very sick person. Naeem, what else is needed to get this person safely home?
So when we meet the patient or the family after we have been notified about the rapid discharge, it is very important that somebody sit with the patient and the family and explain them what sort of support we are looking for in the community. Because a lot of the patient and the family, they will tell you that they never been through this kind of situation. Mm. So it's something very new for them. So what we do is that we sit down and explain, look, these are the supports we are arranging. So these are carer coming 4 times a day who can attend their personal care needs. They're going to be the district nurse team involved 24/7 on call, who would be the primary point of contact. There will be community palliative team would be also 24/7 on call, but obviously they would work along with the district nurse team. And they're going to be GP as well, who will be updated about the recent changes of patient conditions. The last thing we want, patient is at home and the family or the next of kin, they really don't know who to get hold of in the case of an emergency. often you will find the family end up calling to the wrong people, probably just because they haven't been explained that for the symptoms you need to get hold of the district nurse.
Mm.
They would probably ask the carers to address those concerns, which unfortunately not going to be helpful.
Mm.
So it is important that we sit down and explain and give those contact details to the families,
which we also give as a leaflet, don't we?
It comes as a form of a leaflet.
And whose job is it to sort out the fast track, which is the application for funding for care?
So when we apply for the fast track, obviously, just so that we understand how fast track works, it's a funding process purely based on patient's clinical condition. And that's why we explained to the family that this get sorted very fast. That's why it's fast track. It's 24 to 48 hours time. The funding and the package of care will be in place.
Mm.
It's a ward-led process. So we do expect our ward colleague, especially the nurses, to start working on the fast track paperwork. But if they have any sort of particular concern or they're really not quite sure how to go about it, then obviously we are here to help and support. Mm.
And in those rare cases where we are going for the same day, I know that as a team we sometimes just come alongside and roll our sleeves up and actually do to get that couple of hours sort of turnaround.
Okay. I mean, if it is a really rapid discharge, i.e. we're talking about a patient from the time they have identified with a very short prognosis and we're talking about getting home within probably 6-7 hours time, then we ourselves liaise with the CCG directly explaining the dire need of the condition. And CCG, our local CCG especially, they're very understanding. So we do get a package of care very fast.
So there's a lot that needs to be done. I mean, one of the things that we haven't mentioned yet is just how the medications are given when someone gets home. So if the patient has pain or any of those other symptoms that people get at the end of life, the district nurses need to come into the house, they need to have the medicine in the house, and they need to have the key thing, which is an authorization. Can you explain how we make sure that that is there for them when they're called?
So when, as part of our explanation of the community support, we also let the family know that patient will be going with a set of injectable medications, because if we don't explain that, they probably wouldn't know who to call for those medications if they need to be administered. So we do explain these patients go with this sort of medications and the district nurse will be primarily responsible for those meds. And then obviously once we've done the assessment and we have put a plan in place, we go back to the ward and we explain literally all the necessary team who will be involved. So we explain the nurses what they need to do, we try to explain the doctors what they need to do, what the pharmacy need to do, and also what the ward therapy need to do.
So the district nurse referral is an electronic form, and that's the case for all of our local boroughs that we serve as an organisation. And then to get the authorisation for the medication, that's an electronic authorisation on the district nurse referral form, isn't it, that the doctor has to do and the pharmacist has to check. So there's lots of people involved. This is a relatively new process, and I think people on the wards are still struggling a little bit to understand how to do a what we call a MAR chart, which is the medicines authorization form. So we're here to help with that. I mean, when it goes wrong, both of you, like what tends to go wrong? Like kind of what have we seen as a team in terms of what goes wrong?
So usually when something goes wrong, it's due to some sort of breakdown of communication, whether that's between hospital and community colleagues. For example, we had a patient recently who was an actively dying patient who was discharged before a hospital bed was delivered. Now, unfortunately, that ended up in that patient coming back into ED just to wait for that bed to be delivered. So there are, because it's such a complex thing, a discharge, there are things that can go wrong, but we've just got to do our best to communicate with all of our colleagues, ward-based and community-based.
We had another example where a patient went home without the end-of-life medications and without the authorisation. In fact, even if they'd gone with one or the other, but not both of them, the same thing would have happened, that when they got home, they had a fit. And the district nurse was called, but when the nurse arrived in the house, couldn't give anything to this person who was fitting because there was no drugs. no authorisation. So that was very distressing for everyone. Perhaps this would be a good point to mention Coordinate My Care, which is a way that we now electronically communicate with all our community colleagues. So if there is a problem like that, where someone has a fit at home and we want to keep them at home for end of life care, that the London Ambulance Service, the district nurses, the GP would all see the treatment plan that's on Coordinate My Care. Rather than going into that now, we're just going to say you must listen to our podcast episode on Coordinate My Care, which explains all about what that system does. So let's wrap up with some take-home messages then. What are the key things that you want people to take away from this podcast?
So I think the really important thing is recognising a deteriorating dying patient and finding out what their preferred place of death is.
Yeah.
Next thing would be to explain the necessary support that will be arranged. And then last but not the least, how to coordinate to arrange those supports so that there is no communication breakdown.
Yeah, and one of the messages I think we want to get across from the palliative care team is that we are here to help with this process, but we can't do it all. So we're going to come alongside the ward teams and help to manage this, but as a kind of navigator role rather than picking up all the actual kind of work that is required.
I'd also say that very shortly, the Specialist Palliative Care Team intranet page is being updated. It will have lots of information on fast-track discharges, what paperwork to fill in, and what needs to be done in the case of a rapid discharge.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I hope we've remembered everything. really appreciate you both talking to me about this, and thank you for listening. Can I just make a plug, please? If you haven't already completed our Survey Monkey on what you think about these podcasts, we would love your feedback on that. It takes less than a minute to complete. We're trying to write up our findings and our experience of running these podcasts, so please click on the link that will be in the footnotes of this episode. And thanks for listening. Bye.